Health and Fitness Show with Dr. Diane Cooper, proudly supported by Laois Offaly and Westmeath Sports Partnerships.
You're very welcome to the Health and Fitness Show here on Midlands 103. I'm Dr. Diane Cooper, and today we're going to talk to Dr. Noel McCaffrey, CEO and founder of Xwell Medical and exercise physician. And he's going to talk to us all about the numerous benefits of engaging in exercise for people who have chronic clinical conditions. And we're also going to talk to Paul from Port Arlington about a recent 12-week health, fitness and nutrition journey he undertook as part of the Wellness Unleashed programme. So last week on the Health and Fitness Show, we were talking about green and blue exercise and green and blue space. And in fact, if you missed the show, you can see the podcasts on midlands103.com or wherever you get your podcasts from. Just to say thanks so much to everybody for all your wonderful messages of support following my first show. And I got an interesting text from Gillian in Roscommon, who was asking me about had I ever heard of brown exercise or exercise in a brown space. And then I got a lovely photo of a shed full of turf. So well done to Gillian. I'm not sure if listeners would agree about the benefits or the enjoyable element of brown exercise, but certainly, I know you got a great workout, and I hope the hamstrings weren't too sore after that. Okay, so I'm absolutely delighted to introduce our next guest, CEO and founder of Xwell Medical, exercise physician, Dr. Noel McCaffrey. Noel, it's a pleasure to have you with us tonight. Thanks very much for joining me.
Hi, Diane. Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here.
Noel, so I'm delighted to actually tell people about Xwell Medical. It is just such a fantastic programme. It offers so many benefits to so many people. But if you've never heard of Xwell before, Noel, can you let us know what it is?
Okay, Diane. So Xwell Medical is a social enterprise. It's a not-for-profit, which has been on the go since 2019. And what it does is it offers structured exercise programs to people with different long-term medical problems, which are often called chronic illnesses. And when we talk about chronic illnesses, we mean illnesses which are not contagious, by which I mean they're not passed from one person to another, so they're not infections. But they're things like heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, chronic pain, arthritis, liver disease, all of these things which are so prevalent. They actually affect about 40% of the entire population, and they affect more people who are elderly. About, believe it or not, about 85% of people over the age of 65 have one long-term chronic illness. They constitute the biggest public health challenge we face. They consume about nearly 80% of the entire national health spend per annum, and that health spend per annum is 20 billion euro. I suppose the key thing for listeners, Diane, is that they need to be aware that a lot of the unwellness or the poor quality of life that occurs with any long-term illness, disease of the sorts I've described, is actually caused largely by becoming deconditioned or unfit because of lack of physical activity.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really important message. And it applies no matter what the illness is. And the key message to get out is that we can fix this. We can fix the lack of physical activity bit through structured exercise program. And a really important other point to be aware of with chronic illness is that very many people with chronic illness become what's called socially isolated or cut off from other people because of lack of mobility and lack of confidence and losing different elements of their fitness, which have impact on their daily lives, and they make them less able to live on their own. They need help, but it puts them off from their neighbours and friends, and they become lonely. Yeah. And the mental wellness aspect of chronic illness is almost as important as the physical aspect of chronic illness. And one of the big benefits of group exercise classes is that they address both problems. They address the fitness through structured, progressive, safe, enjoyable exercise classes. But they also get people out of the home, you know, meeting friends and reconnecting. And the impact on that is profound. And the combination of the two, basically, it transforms lives. It is,
yeah.
exhilarating medicine, and it works.
You mentioned the exercise classes. For people who haven't done anything like this before and might be thinking about it, would you mind giving us a bit of an insight into a typical class? So what do your participants typically do when they show up for their exercise class?
The exercise class has three components to it, and every class will have all three elements in it. So the three elements are, firstly, strength work. And strength is a really important part of your fitness. It describes, like, you know, how much can I lift? How strong am I? And the critical thing is that if your strength falls progressively, eventually you'll notice the impact. So if it's your pelvic and thigh muscles and they weaken and weaken and weaken, eventually you develop difficulty standing up, which has obvious profound impact of getting off the toilet seat, getting out of bed, getting out of the car, standing up at the kitchen table. So that's really important. And it's particularly important for women because women have less muscle mass than men in the first place. And strength is a bit of the wellness sort of regime that is often underemphasized or ignored. So that's the first thing. The second element of the class is aerobic exercise. And aerobic exercise is that form of exercise which is like rhythmic, large muscle group exercise, like waving your hands around or marching on the spot or jogging on the spot, or if you're able, jogging or walking or cycling. That's aerobic exercise. And the thing about aerobic exercise is it involves getting a little breathless. And a really important point to make, Diane, is a lot of people with illness become afraid of getting breathless.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with being breathless. It's a perfectly normal experience once it's not extreme. And not only is it a perfectly normal experience, it's an enjoyable experience once it's not extreme. And it's good for you once it's not extreme. Because when you're breathless a little, you are asking your heart and lungs to work a bit harder, and that is good for your heart and lungs.
Yeah.
So that's the second component of the exercise classes. And the third is balance. Balance and what's called core strength, which is really important for people who are pushing on a little bit, maybe getting a little bit unsteady, and it has a major effect on reducing the risk of falls. So all classes will have those three elements. And obviously one of the challenges for running a program like this is to cater for people with different abilities in the same class. But that's our problem, not the participants' problem, and we're well used to this, and there's loads of different ways of doing it. Well, if the numbers get big enough in any centre, we offer a gentle class and a standard class and an advanced class. But even within one group, it's absolutely possible to accommodate all abilities. And I'd like to say, Diane, as well, that sometimes the people who lack the confidence to consider exercise, they have this fear because they are perhaps quite frail or they haven't done it in a long time. And the great news is that the people who show the greatest proportionate improvement are in fact these very people, the ones who start off the weakest, the ones who may be least confident about doing it. They are the very people who improve the most, relatively speaking. And so no matter who you are or how long you've had your illness or what the illness is, I can reassure everybody that you will improve dramatically by working with us or with groups like yourself, Diane, to get active again and restore and reacquaint yourself with the joy of exercise, because it is addictive. And that's in a good way. And it is exhilarating and it transforms your life. It's a hugely important message. And exercise, as you know, is inexpensive. And it is the most impactful intervention that we know of for healthy aging.
Just when you mentioned healthy aging there, just something that we would have observed, and I wonder what you think yourself. Like, you're talking about particular components of fitness, for example, balance, right? Now, what we would find is, generally, as people get into the older decades, then people start to, there's conversations about balance and maybe we should do some balance training. And, you know, when people are noticing all of these decrements and strength and so on. But I suppose a lot of where we would be coming from is trying to get people, even in the earlier decades, like people in their 30s and 40s, to be thinking about your muscle function, thinking about your muscle strength. Like, if you notice that you're struggling to get out of a chair, you know, in your mid 40s or whatever it is, like, we don't don't need to leave all of these things until the later. When we talk about healthy aging, I think sometimes people think, oh, that's for later. But it's actually like all of these changes kind of start to happen in the body from the 30s. So, you know, we would be certainly encouraging people in all decades of life to start thinking about these things and engaging in those different modes of exercise. And I'm wondering what you think of that.
You're absolutely right. And the goal does for everybody involved in public health. The mission is to try to get people to adopt a healthy lifestyle from their teenage years, to graduate from school with the life skill of regular physical activity and healthy nutrition, and to maintain that healthy lifestyle throughout their life. You're absolutely right. Now, I suppose it's worth explaining to the listeners, Diane, that there's a difference between primary prevention, as we call it, and secondary mm-hmm. prevention. Mm-hmm. Primary prevention is what you just mentioned, the importance of preventing illnesses happening by adopting and sustaining a healthy lifestyle that includes several things, including, you know, being careful about your alcohol, stress management, not smoking, healthy nutrition, and regular physical activity. They're all important. I suppose from our point of view in Exwell, we are committed to one segment of this extremely important activity, and the bit we're committed to is what's called secondary prevention. That is helping people who already have an established illness. Now, there's a couple of reasons why we're focusing on this. One is that challenge is huge.
Yeah.
The numbers are enormous. You know, it's an incredible burden of care that needs to be delivered. Now, and the people with chronic illness tend, for various reasons, to sort of get left out of the equation in considering the provision of exercise options in public parks and through groups and in gyms. There's a certain anxiety about working with these groups because they may be viewed as a risk.
Yes, yeah.
So there's a huge and incredibly important burden of care staring us in the face that needs to be delivered. One of the things I really believe strongly is that people who have chronic illness, there's a network around them that are looking after them or helping them to maintain their normal social contacts and just be as active as they can. And those people themselves, their family or their friends, in my opinion, have a certain level of distress around this.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
There's a burden of care which is emotional and financial and time-consuming, which is distressing. And that distress is very often hidden by the person experiencing it because that person doesn't want the person they're looking after to feel even worse.
Of course.
And that is not good for the health of, let's call it, the companion or the carer. And the impact on those people of seeing the people they're looking after improving is itself enormous.
And Noel, just I know you've talked an awful lot about the benefits that people get, but just when we think about the actual participants themselves, will you just give our listeners, like, you know, a few key points that they would often say, like, what do they mention commonly that they love about your classes? Because they just seem to love them.
The messages are simple. People just, I mean, it's very rewarding to us as a team who are so committed to it to hear people say, like, you gave me back my life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You changed my life. I never thought I would feel as good again. I did not think this was possible. And I suppose your listeners may have heard the word resilience discussed in medical context. The word resilience is defined as meaning the ability to retain a positive attitude and optimism in the face of setbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the health context, that means if somebody has, for example, a condition like, you may have heard of COPD, this is a lung condition where you get recurring what are called exacerbations of breathlessness and maybe infection in the lung. And then that might require hospitalization, or it may not, or a course of antibiotics. And then they're a little better, and this may happen again and again and three or four times a year. And what people notice who have COPD is that their exacerbation rate falls. Mm-hmm. They're having fewer of these. But resilience is a word that is so embedded in what we do. It's not something, resilience per se, that you can measure on a score of 0 to 10, but it is what encapsulates the change that people experience. They become resilient in the face of setbacks of a medical nature. And one of them I'd like to just touch on, Diane, if I might, is the presence of pain.
Mm.
Because very many people who are attending our programs have pain. Now, it mightn't be why they're attending, and I'm sure you're the same with your programs. They may have heart attack or have had it, but they have a bad knee or a bad back or something that bothers them. And very often people quite reasonably wonder, well, should I be exercising if I have pain? Now, I'd like to just summarize our own data around pain, which is this. About 65% of people attending the EXO program have long-term pain. That is pain on more than 4 days a week. And when we ask them, what happened to your pain since you started the program, which would have been at least 4 weeks earlier, the answer was that in 95% of cases, 95%, the pain either got better or did not change. Now, there are two really important messages there. One is the presence of pain is not a barrier to taking part in regular exercise.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. And the second important message is it may even get better. And that reflects a fundamental change in the way the medical profession is approaching the question of chronic pain in the first place. And and it's a complete change away from using medication and injections towards movement-based treatment
Absolutely.
Of chronic pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is the single commonest question we get asked at induction sessions is, but I have a sore knee or a sore back, or what's going to happen to me if I do this? And the message is that if you do your exercise class and your knee pain gets a little bit worse, then settles down overnight, and then the next class the same thing happens. But over time, the pain is not changing. Then you ignore it and get on with it because the benefits of the exercise are so incredible.
Absolutely. Just linked to that, I think this is just important to say, we actually did a piece of research a couple of years ago in Laois, and we asked 353 middle-aged and older adults all about their physical activity participation rates, we'll say, in balance and strength and aerobic exercise and all these things. But we also asked them about barriers to exercise. And the common barriers listed were pain, in joints and muscles, and also the presence of clinical conditions and the fear of engaging in exercise because they have clinical conditions, and they just really didn't know what to do, if it was safe. And so you've heard it here today, listeners. There are so many benefits to engaging in these types of programs, and to know that that's a fear that's out there in Laois. I'm sure it's as Noel has just said, it's the same in different counties. So please do pay heed to what Noel's talking about today, because this is really, really life-changing stuff. And I suppose in line with just talking about our location, Noel, I know that you are now in Laois and Offaly. You were in Westmead. Would you mind just giving our listeners an idea of where you are and maybe when the sessions are?
Yeah, so we're in at Lone Regional Sports Centre. This class is, I think, every day there. We're in St Mary's Community Hall in Tullamore, where the classes take place on Monday and Wednesday afternoons. And we're also in St Mary's in Port Laois, where the classes are at 10 a.m. on Mondays and Wednesdays. Now, the thing is, if anybody's interested, what they should do, please, is just ask their GP or their community physio for a referral.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's very simple. It's actually very simple for the GPs to do the referral. There's a platform called HealthLink, which all the GPs know about. And it's dreadfully simple for the GPs just to press a button and send XOL Medical a referral. So that's the easiest way. We do also have a different email address to which physios or other people can send referrals. And that's called HealthMail. And the email address for, say, community physios is xwellmedical@healthmail.ie, all one word, EXWELL medical, MEDICAL, healthmail, HealthMail.ie. And that'll get to us. And then once we get it, we will contact the patient and offer them an induction. And the important information to have on the referral to us is a contact phone number. So that's how to engage. And what we do is we run an induction session probably once a month in each location. A really important message as well is when you do think about doing it, just do it. Get onto it, attend the induction, and then start the class straight away. Because you can think about this as long as you like. But, you know, when people say, oh, I'll do it for the grandchildren are back in school after the holidays or after, that sort of approach is difficult and disappointing and frustrating because it tends to lead to not getting started.
There's never a best time. The best time is now.
Decide you're doing it and do it this minute. And I mentioned there the induction. What happens at the induction is an introductory talk like this, but also baseline testing.
Mm.
Now, and the testing is really important because we measure, in very, very simple ways, we measure strength and aerobic fitness, and we measure risk of falling, and we measure self-rated quality of life with questionnaires. And it's immensely important to capture impact. In Xwell, and I'm sure you're the same, there are three critical pillars to what we do. One is the exercise itself. The second is the social interaction. And the third is measurement. Because we might think this is a great program, but we have to show you, mm-hmm. the participant, that you're improving. And we also have to show the HSE, mm-hmm. that it's working or not working, so that we can hopefully continue to get funding. And just by the way, in passing, the programs in the Midlands are free and they're supported by the HSE.
Fantastic.
By the Dublin Midlands Hospital Group, which is fantastic. And we need to thank them because it has been a big step forward for us to secure HSE funding, mm-hmm. for our programs. And one of the most enlightened and supportive groups has in fact been the Dublin Midlands Hospital Group, which is responsible for delivering care throughout the Midlands, including Laois, Offaly and Westmeath.
Absolutely fantastic. Noel, I could literally talk to you all day. I love what you do. Thank you so much for your time. And listeners, please, please, please do get in contact. So I'm delighted to have Paul from Port Arlington joining me in studio today. Paul is going to talk to us about a recent 12-week fitness, health and nutrition journey he undertook. So it was called Wellness Unleashed. It was run by Laois Sports Partnership and True Fitness and funded by Sport Ireland. You know, sometimes what we do on the programme is we might talk to maybe the experts that are running certain programmes and events and stuff like that. But what I'm really interested in doing today is actually to talk to Paul about his experiences, and he's going to share them with you, which is really interesting. And no pressure, Paul, but you're my first ever guest in studio, so it's all on you. No.
My claim to fame.
You're very welcome in the studio, Paul. Thanks a million for coming in.
No problem.
Can I just ask, just so that the listeners get a feel for you and maybe where you were before the programme, so we know you've done 12 weeks and it's over now maybe 4 weeks. So before you did the programme, will you just give us some idea into where you were, like in relation to training? We'll start with training. Were you doing any training at the time?
I had probably slid away from training at that stage. I suppose for me, COVID sort of stopped a lot of the training that I had been doing. And what I was doing beforehand was very sporadic, maybe some mountain biking, bit of gym work, small bit of running.
Mm-hmm.
But once COVID hit, I suppose the system that I had in place fell by the wayside.
As it did for so many people, absolutely. Mm. So you do have a history. You definitely have a training history, but as you said, it had been badly impacted for a while leading up to this this programme. And in terms of nutrition, where were you at with that?
So I suppose I learned to cook late in life, and what I cook was very limited. I work shift work, so my eating pattern was poor at best, and I wouldn't be great at preparing meals to bring with me. So what that meant was that I was eating a lot out of deli counters, mm-hmm. or it could be fast food on a particular day. So again, that wasn't great. If I was at home, I would cook, but again, it'd be a simple pasta or a rice dish. It wouldn't be anything too spectacular.
Yeah, well, it's really important to say, Paul, we would get kind of a lot of contact from people who work shift work, and it's really difficult. It's really difficult to actually engage in regular healthy lifestyle practices because your body clock and everything is all over the place. So there's a definite challenge when it comes to healthy eating with the shift work, and all credit to you for being honest there, because it is a challenge. The big question, I suppose, why did you sign up to the programme?
As I said, over the years, I have a level of fitness, and I would have engaged in, I suppose, a lot of activity, but not inconsistent. So over the years, I would have done some adventure races, which was great because I would have a goal. So it'd be an event to train towards. I've done TRX classes, which was certain days of the week. So I had a schedule in place that, mm-hmm. of events that I wanted to do. And I just sort of, for some reason, fell off the wagon, and I started feeling tired and very unmotivated, mm-hmm. without having a goal in mind for what to do.
Yep.
So what it meant was that I had no consistent training and no pattern. So if I woke up in the morning, I could have the best will in the world to go to the gym at 10 o'clock in the morning. 10 o'clock in the morning then becomes 6 o'clock in the evening, and it's very easy just to leave it at that stage.
Yeah, and I wonder, is this sounding familiar to any of our listeners? And I've done it myself. Consistency is one of the difficult things. It's what gets results. Consistency is what gets results, but it's very difficult initially to achieve it until you develop those patterns. So it's interesting that you say that. So I'm sure maybe something like a structured program, kind of the thinking might be that it would give you that consistency to follow.
Yeah, so I am quite motivated when I have a goal. So the goal could be the end date of this program. It could be a race, whatever it was at that stage. But when I don't have that, I find it very hard to keep myself motivated. Now, I suppose another thing I should say is that without having a structured class, I found that I was probably overexerting myself when I was training. So if I went to the gym, I was doing too much. And then the next day or two, I was sore and tired, which mm-hmm. was a great excuse not to train for the next couple of days. So it was probably as much a lack of education and discipline on my behalf when I was training that allowed the extra days to pass without having that consistency.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because actually I mentioned that last week. We were talking about kind of, say, some of the pitfalls for people who are getting started with exercise. And strangely enough, people have a tendency to do that. So to work way too hard in their sessions or do way too much at the start. And of course, then that is, of course, going to cause muscle damage and stuff like that. But it's not a comfortable experience, and you know it does lead to time delays, as you said, between the next session and stuff. So all of the things that you're describing, Paul, would be fairly typical to what we would see. It's lovely to hear it coming from you. So yeah, so you got this structure anyway, and you have worked, you've done really well over the last 12 weeks. So will you give our listeners an idea into, if we just start with the training? So I know you did a few sessions every week, and we should say this was actually an online program.
This was an online program, and it started with a fitness assessment on day one. And I suppose for me, that was my starting point. I then had a goal that in, I think it was 12 weeks time, I had another fitness assessment. So that in itself was my goal to motivate myself to start this course.
Brilliant, yeah.
So the initial fitness assessment was a walk-run test.
There was a six-minute walk test.
There was a minute of push-ups, depending on what type of push-up you can do. There was a sit-to-stand test, a balance test, and I think that's what it
is. Yeah, I think so. I know you had your fitness assessed, so that would have been the 6-minute walk test.
Yes.
And of course, you had balance. That was a 30-second eyes closed single leg test.
Yeah, and that was surprising, in fairness, as to how poor my balance actually was at that stage. Once I closed my eyes, so most of us think that we're fairly stable. And
that's interesting, because often what we see is people don't think about their balance until they're maybe in their 60s or 70s. Now, we know you're nowhere near your 60s or 70s.
So I suppose just to say, I'm 45 years of age, I'm not past it just yet.
So for you, and I suppose the reason kind of these types of balance tests are put into the program is to create awareness. So if your balance isn't optimal in your mid-40s, you can imagine, if we don't train it, how that would change to the mid-50s, the mid-60s and the mid-70s. And so it's just to have this conversation that we really need to look at these things in our middle age before they may become a problem in the later years. And of course, I think that was a bit of an eye-opener for you anyway, the balance test.
Definitely.
And then you did your strength test. So you did your sit-to-stand and you did your push-up test. So you had a fairly good, four tests, but you had a fairly good idea of where you were starting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose I thought my baseline wasn't too bad. I performed better than I actually thought I was going to perform on the day. So again, that was another motivating factor that I wasn't at rock bottom at that stage.
Brilliant. And you know, no matter where I suppose you are, where you start on your journey, the big thing is that you will move from A to B. So it doesn't matter where you start off, but you will, of course, improve with the training. Speaking of the training, will you give our listeners an insight into what you did? So like, how long were the sessions? What was involved in them?
So the exercise sessions were about an hour each. It would start off very light, so a very light warm-up, some flexibility. You got into your main phase of exercise then. So that was a set of exercises, originally starting out at about 30 seconds each, with a 30-second break while the next exercise is being described. And you're still moving within that 30-second break. So you've possibly 20 minutes of exercise at that stage. So you're moving from a 30-second intense exercise, 30-second intense exercise up to 45 seconds as the program develops.
Progresses, brilliant, yeah.
When your main phase of exercise was finished, you go into a flexibility, so some stretching, and you move from there to balance and some body composition. So it could be push-ups, sit-ups, sit-to-stand, those sort of exercises.
So it sounds like all bases were covered. You did a bit of fitness work there, you had your balance, you had your stretching and mobility, and then you had your strength work.
Yes.
And so a lot is covered in an hour. So
it is, but yeah. Just to say, in the main phase of the exercise, within each exercise, there's levels.
Mm-hmm.
So the program was geared towards a lot of different fitness levels. I would have considered my fitness level at that stage to be fairly good, so I was doing the advanced section of each exercise, but there was an intermediate and a basic exercise, depending on how you were feeling on the particular day.
Excellent. That's fantastic. So, Paul, just then, if we move on to nutrition. So I know that you did a number of nutrition workshops as part of the programme. So can you tell us maybe what you might have found useful about that? Like, what kind of stuck out for you? What changes have you made and what are you finding useful?
Yeah, so within that, there was a number of online workshops in relation to nutrition. Some were cooking classes where you got to choose what you want to see being made.
Excellent.
And then others were was education in relation to nutrition and balancing meals. So within that, there was options for sort of snacks. There was cheat meals. There was how to balance a dinner. So it wasn't very strict. It just gave you the information that you could choose on a particular day about how to eat healthily. And in fairness, eat on a budget.
Great.
Because previously, I suppose I would have had a perception that eating healthily was very time consuming for preparation. And if you eat healthy, it can be far more costly than just buying a packaged meal. But within this route, in fairness, the girl, the nutritionist, she was very conscious of pricing, and it was definitely a focus of hers within these workshops.
Brilliant, brilliant. And I think actually on that, what we might do if listeners are interested is that we could actually get our hands on some of those recipes and share them. And you found them useful.
I found them very useful. And so did my kids. Everybody in the household ate the same. So it's from breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks in between. It was all covered.
That's great. And I'm delighted to hear, Paul, about kind of the unified family approach, because a lot of people would say to us, look, I eat one thing and kids eat a different thing and so on. And that's exhausting. It's absolutely. And I know in some cases it can't be helped. But in this case, it sounds like the recipes were appropriate for family life, which is great.
Yeah, it wasn't a bland boiled chicken breast or anything like that. Mm. There were actual meals or breakfasts that are tasty.
Great. And so for you, I suppose, in the shift work that you do, was there any kind of like useful information that you were able to make better choices if you were eating out, or were you able to apply anything practically in that way?
Yeah, so I suppose the first thing was what was being not pushed but suggested is that cook once, eat twice. So cook enough on one meal that it could be a lunch or a dinner a day or two later. So again, that was front loading the work for rest days, that I could make a meal and have it while I'm working. And then just when I'm out, just making slightly different choices as to, instead of having a white bread sandwich, maybe I might have a wrap or something that just isn't, doesn't have the same calories and as a white bread sandwich, and maybe calorific or maybe nutritionally better.
Yeah. And it's all the little changes that add up over time to big changes.
Yeah. There was no huge change here. It was all little changes. I didn't have to change my lifestyle to fit around an eating plan.
I think that's really important, because that is just not sustainable. You can't do it. And I'm 20 years working with people in consultations for different things, exercise and other things. But, if it's nearly a full time job for you to actually change your nutrition and get your exercise in and stuff, that is an impossible task. It is not sustainable. You have to find small, easy ways of making your health better and making small changes. Otherwise, it's just absolutely impossible. So what you're talking about here is great.
It's definitely more sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, just one thing, just when you mentioned online training, like obviously with COVID, things changed. So we moved from very much kind of on-site approaches to online. And just to get your opinion, I'm just wondering, just in your opinion, kind of advantages and disadvantages of online training.
Yeah, so I was very reluctant in the online training because I like the social aspect of classes. I've done circuit classes and TRX classes previously, and the fun of the class is probably as much of a motivating factor as the class itself. But I was surprised that once I got started, I actually forgot that I wasn't in a class.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was just a class. But I suppose what I should have said earlier on is that when I started this, I had set myself a goal that I was going to do 4 to 5 classes a week. And there was 5 online classes, 5 live online classes each week. And I did hit that target. But I found as the program went on, I just wanted to do more. I sort of got into a system of doing it. So I would do the online classes. At weekends, I would do a pre-recorded class, or if for work purposes or for whatever reason I couldn't make a daily class, I would just do an online class. And on top of that, I found myself going for walks or runs just to do that little bit more.
Wow.
So it sort of, I suppose I got in and it got my motivation back.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that might explain the post-test scores. So when you completed your post-test, did you find that there were changes, or even just actually, never mind the numbers for a minute, kind of what changes after the 12 weeks would you have described for yourself? What did you notice?
So early on, and through it wasn't even towards the end of the program, I noticed that definitely my energy levels increased significantly. And I had a drive to get out and do more than I had been doing. I wouldn't be a great person for weighing myself, but my clothes fit better. And it just, I felt better. But coming towards the end of the course, I had a little hiccup where I got COVID, which knocked me back a bit.
Of course, yeah.
So it was just my energy levels had dropped off. So by the time it came to the post-testing, I had improved in most aspects. The 6-minute walk test, I had ran that originally, and my figure for that at the end was roughly what it was at the start, but I was laboured in my breathing because of COVID.
So that is an achievement in itself, obviously. So it would have been an awful lot higher had you not,
I think so. But also what I'd done at that stage was, even with the tiredness, I had myself worked up that I wanted to still do some sort of exercise. So what I was doing was the online pre-recorded exercise at a lower intensity level. So I was doing a beginner to a intermediate level, which I think helped me improve quickly.
Yes. And can I do a little sidestep there, a little teaching point? That's the real right thing to do. Even if you're someone who's regularly training, if you're feeling really tired, if you've had a cold or a flu or an illness, or with all of the stresses and strains of life, if you have intended to do a particular session and you're just not up for it for that particular day or week or whatever, the best thing that you can do is do something, but do it at a lighter level, which is exactly what you're describing. So I can't emphasize enough how important that is in a long-term health and fitness journey. You have to work with your body, do what it's able to do. And then when your vitality and your energy picks up, you can push on then when you're ready. So gold star for you there, Paul.
But just, I suppose, prior to this program, my training would have been get into a high heart rate zone and kill myself effectively.
I'm sure that's what it feels like as well.
Yeah, but these classes didn't feel like that. Mm. I definitely felt the improvements, but you worked for 45 seconds. You had a 15-second time frame where you're still moving, but you're bringing your heart rate down. And it never felt like I was crucifying my body, which meant I was able for the next class.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, this is textbook beautiful training. This is what every exercise physiologist wants for the people that they're working with. That's fabulous.
And before, or as COVID hit, I decided I was going to buy gym equipment and put it in the shed. Mm. And I did that, and I have plenty of equipment in the shed, and it was just hard work. I just found the online classes easier. Mm-hmm. Not physically easier, definitely, but I have somebody telling me what I need to do.
Yeah.
I'm being monitored for my technique and my exertion level.
Yeah, absolutely. And a little message in there as well, like to maybe not go it alone. So particularly if you're starting a health and fitness journey, ask for help. There's plenty of people out there that would only be delighted to help you, and plenty of programmes. And in fact, I know there will be many more funded programmes coming up over the next few months, and I will be sure to tell you about those. They'll be online and on site. So that's an important point, Paul. And go ahead.
Sorry, I suppose when we were talking about nutrition, the only positive part I found out of COVID was that the fast food shops were closed. So it made it a little bit easier to prepare a bit better.
Absolutely. So just when you mentioned goals there, Paul, I know we were just having a quick chat earlier and you mentioned your personal goals, but you also mentioned something really interesting about work goals. And I think this might be helpful to other people who need to or want to meet those metrics. So will you just tell our listeners what we were talking about there in terms of your work goals?
Yeah. So in work, I have to sign into work and personal goals to be completed over the course of a year. And this program, so my one goal that I set was to improve my fitness. And this goal hit that. I achieved this goal through this program because it was a quantifiable course that I have done that showed a pre and post result at the end. So it allowed me to meet a work-related goal.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And so if for those of you, if you're interested in getting involved in programmes like this, as I said, there will be funded programmes coming up, which means they're free to take part in. And I think we can see from Paul the many benefits that have come from engaging in programmes like this. So I'll be sure to share that information with you. Your last words of wisdom, Paul, for anyone out there now who's thinking, do you know what, I really... And people tend to do this after the summertime, kind of mid-September, October, and then January are when people really start to think about, okay, maybe I'll start making some lifestyle changes. Do you have any advice for people who are in that headspace and kind of want to get started?
So I think you need to find a group or a program to start and start easy. Rather than start by yourself, it's very easy to fall off the wagon at that stage and to have some sort of time frame in your own head as to what you want to do and what goal you need to achieve at the end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so important. So, Paul, thank you so much for coming into studio today and giving us your time and all of your insights into your experience over the last 12 weeks. We really appreciate it, and we just want to wish you the very best of luck in your onward journey.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much to both of my guests today, Paul from Port Arlington and Dr. Noel McCaffrey from Exwell Medical. If you'd like to get in touch, I'd love to hear from you, and you can email me on healthandfitness@midlands103.com. If you've any suggestions for topics you'd really like to hear about or any questions, I'd love to hear from you. And otherwise, have a lovely weekend, and I'll chat to you next Friday from 7pm.
The Health and Fitness Show with Dr. Diane Cooper, proudly supported by Leash Offaly and Westmeath Sports Partnerships.